Welcome to Malkier Talks, a Wheel of Time theory podcast, but today will be a little different. Today I'm not doing theories. Today we're talking about why you should read the Wheel of Time. And rather than tell you myself why you should read the Wheel of Time, I have thrown it out to content creators and people involved in the fandom to say, come join me and tell everybody why you think as well you should read the Wheel of Time. And it's going to be spoiler-free, which is quite strange for me to do, because I don't often do spoiler-free episodes. But yeah, we're going to do it spoiler-free so you can actually find out why you should read the books and not actually have the story ruined for you. I have four wonderful people here with me today. First up, we have Jesse.
Hi. Should I introduce myself?
Yeah, go for it. Tell everyone who you are and what you do, Jesse.
Yeah, so I'm Jesse. I'm one of the two co-hosts from Another Turning, which is a podcast in theory about the show adaptation, but like that's like dragging and we're not as forward thinking about the news and stuff. It was supposed to be like predictions and fun stuff, and now we're running out. So it's just general Wheel of Time at this point. But I do it with my brother. We kind of started it as a way to like stop annoying the rest of our family whenever we talked about Wheel of Time.
So. Nice. Wonderful. I was glad to have you here. Next, as I go around, we have Cheyenne, who's also joined us. Say hello.
Yeah, so hello. I am Cheyenne Sedai. I Sedai of the Grey Aja at Weaves of the Wheel, which is a community role play based around the fourth age in the Wheel of Time. If you want to join a role play or just our reading room for a general discussion, feel free to DM me on Instagram at Cheyenne Sedai.
Awesome. Good to have you here. Next up on the list, we have Jen from Talk Around Riyadh. Say hello, Jen.
Hi, I'm Jen from Talk Around Riyadh, Wheel of Time Showcast. And we're a podcast that basically talks about show news. We're very spoiler heavy, so I will try not to do any of that today. But yeah, like Jesse said, the show news is kind of drying up. So we also do... we do some deep dives into characters and places in the book and different kinds of things like that.
Awesome. And last but not least, we have the fabulous Bajor Monmehel, if I've said that right or wrong. We have Andrew from the Black Tower podcast as well.
And to be fair, I can't say half the words myself, so you're asking the wrong guy. Yes, I am Andrew. I am one of the three hosts over on the Black Tower podcast. We are a 100% spoiler podcast. We pick topics from the Wheel of Time, and we talk about them all the way from books 1 through 14, including all like the companions and that kind of stuff. Occasionally, we'll do like less spoilers, but most of the time, it's full spoilers.
I hadn't quite realized how many sort of spoilery people had joined us. Jess, do you do spoilers with your non-show episodes?
So we try to keep it to like the first two books, because like that's what we're figuring will be content for the first season. But like we've had done spoiler free stuff. We're just good about spoiler warning. So it's episode by episode kind of.
That is definitely some of the fandom does. Pretty much everyone has a spoiler warning of some kind. Usually book specific. It is hard to do, definitely.
So yeah, for example, like right now, there's a relatively new member in Wheels of the Wheel, Kalurs. He just finished Fires of Heaven. And we warned him, it'll be spoilers everywhere because this is the fourth age. I mean, the fact that there's a black tower like in the roleplay, and he hasn't even got it to Battle Lord of Chaos. So it's hard, but seeing his reactions like on our Discord channel has been amazing. Like the moment that he finished Fires of Heaven I'm not even gonna say what it is, but the moment that he finished Fires of Heaven, all of us were living for those reactions.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, it's one of those points. A lot of people do first-time reader podcasts and shows. I'm sure you've all seen some of them, interacted with some of them. And it's something different when you watch people or hear people reading the books. If you guys had to say your favorite sort of moment to see people read, what would it be? Jen, do you have one?
I don't know. Well, what I can say what it was. Oh.
I think we could say. Without ruining it? Yeah, I think we could say like a place or.
Like Dumai's Wells.
Yeah, that doesn't give anything away. Exactly. That's you could say a place or a moment without giving it context, and then we're not giving any spoilers. So
that's a pretty good moment.
Do you have a favorite, Jesse?
I think there's ones that I like looking forward to for good reasons and one for bad reasons. Like there's a. certain couple that, like, I like seeing people's reactions to that, because that's a bit of a WTF kind of moment, and I like seeing that reaction. But then there's some good ones. Ah, geez. I have a partner, my partner and my little brother are reading Fires of Heaven for the first time. So there's some, those are the moments that are kind of highlighted to me. And the igloo scene, I think that's one that's always good to see first reactions to.
Andrew, you're a fan of the igloo scene, aren't you?
Yes. And as I always have to say, not for the obvious reason people assume. Not because it is the kind of scene it is, but because of who it involves. And I'm like, finally, about fucking time.
Yeah, there's quite a few moments in there.
My God.
Just like my first time reading it, Null, he is only on, we just finished chapter 11, because he only reads when he takes the tram to work, and we've worked so little this year thanks to COVID. So he's struggling to get through the books just because of that. And even then, sometimes he's talking to me about things, and I remember one day he was saying, like, oh, it's quite nice. We've had this little interaction at in the villages, and people are this and done that. And then on the way home from work, he's literally sent me a message saying, holy shit, Rob, like, it just went from 0 to 60.
Oh my God.
And yeah, I think
I've
that's
been on both sides of that.
Yeah. It's a big part of the books, isn't it? It does. I don't know when you were all reading it for the first time, but for me, it does suddenly just, it's almost like whiplash. You suddenly go, hold up, the story just went from 0 to 60, or they just dropped the bombshell. And sometimes you see it coming and sometimes you don't. And it's a roller coaster of a ride.
Yeah. Yeah, and I've been on both sides of that. Like, I've gotten the chance to see, like, first-time readers, but when I've only read The Wheel of Time once earlier, like, between last year and this year. It's actually been almost a year since I started, because it was in December.
Wow.
And so around, what was it, Crown of Swords, that was when I joined Winds of the Wheel. Like, I met Ronit. Like, we just became really good friends. And so it's always me, like, sending him, like, reactions, like, immediately. You don't know how many times I've spam him, like, with reactions as I read the books. So, yeah, I've been on both sides of it. But now seeing, like, Colors of reactions, like, oh, my God, like, containing spoilers, being able to raffle him. Raffles are always fun.
I gave my first raffle to Null the other day, so I can appreciate that. Has anyone ever given the book to a friend? Out of the group here, I see a couple of nods. Andrew, how did you, first off, when you gave the book to this person, what did you say about the book, and what was their reaction about it?
So generally I'll ask people, like, you know, hey, do you enjoy Lord of the Rings? And if they say yeah, and I'm like, okay, cool, do you like really long series? And they say yeah, I'm like, okay, how would you like a really long series that is better than Lord of the Rings? And they're like, okay. And then, you know, I'm like, okay, well, you know, here, you can borrow the first book. It's like, now, like a lot of books, got a little slow start. You know, you just have to push through it. And that'll be even more apparent later if you make it past, you know, the first 3, 4, 5 books. But that's generally how it goes. I use Lord of the Rings as like that kind of very popular, a lot of people enjoy it. And I don't think I've met anybody that enjoys Lord of the Rings that can't stand Wheel of Time.
I think that's fair. Jesse, have you ever given the book out? And how do you describe it when you do, or if you do?
So like I said, my brother and I have this podcast together, and we have two other brothers that we've both like done a lot of work. So I think they just get indoctrinated by like osmosis. But for my partner, it was very much a like, yeah, I don't know that I've ever like recommended it with like, this is how you read it. It's more like, you have to read this. You don't have a choice. But usually it's that, like, I rope him in with, like, the lore and the world building. So, like, for my partner specifically, he's a huge World of Warcraft fan. So, like, bringing him in and, like, being like, well, you think that world is great. Let me tell you about this one. And, like, kind of, like, telling them a bit about the history without spoiling too much. So, like, the idea of, like, it's this magic system that's split by gender. And there's this chaos element because the men go insane. And, like, that kind of thing, I think, is what really kind of I've used to rope people in, is, like, this crazy world with crazy magic.
Is that successful, have you found? Or
well, again, I don't think you really had a choice, so it's been successful so far.
Fair enough. Jen, if you give the book out, what's your technique?
I actually I was recommended the book by Joe and Tom, who I do the podcast with.
Oh, brilliant.
I tried to get my husband to read it, and he cannot commit. We read the prologue one night, like, together, mm-hmm. and then he won't. I don't know. I think the problem is that, like, I read it when I was commuting. I read it, like, 15 years ago, but I would read so much more when I was commuting. Mm-hmm. So now I feel like having kids and being home all the time, I don't read nearly as much as I used to read. So I think maybe if he was still commuting, he would have more time to read it. But yeah, I mean, I like how it is like Lord of the Rings. Like, that's a good way to recommend it. And then it starts out very similar to like every fantasy book you've ever read. And then it just like takes a sharp left and
veers into its own
so
channel,
different, you know? Yeah. So I really like that about it. It brings you in a familiar way and then takes you to like a different place they not expect
it. How did your co-host sell it to you? What did they say to make you read it? Or was it a case
really
of
remember.
Just read it?
Yeah, I don't remember. I mean, I'd read Lord of the Rings. I'd read Dragonlance at that point. So I was into fantasy stuff and they probably just said, here's another fantasy book. I don't know. I don't really remember, but I would like the same thing. Like, I would be reading it and then I'd be emailing them at work, like what I'd read on the way in. And we'd be chatting about it all day over email.
I distinctly remember Ben recommending the series to me, and it was very much a, like, this was post Robert Jordan passing away, but before Brandon Sanderson had been picked to finish. It was in that in-between zone. And he would talk to me about this series. He didn't tell me that much. He was like, it's amazing. It's the best thing I've ever read. It deserves to be a TV show more than anything I've ever read, but don't read it because it's never going to be finished. That's how he would like tell me about it. And then I picked it up like on accident. It wasn't even, but it was like, this is the best thing I've ever read, but you're not allowed to read it.
Wow.
It sounds like reverse psychology. Don't read it. Read it.
Yeah. Don't ever read this book. I mean, that's a fun moment to have, pick up the book anyway, with not knowing if it was going to be finished. And you know, something I learned watching Brandon Sanderson's YouTube, just to segue for a moment, he actually was kind of second considered to do the books when Harriet was looking for someone. Robert Jordan and George R. Martin were friends, and Harriet, for about half a heartbeat, considered asking George to finish the series. Okay. I see lots of shaking of heads.
I can't imagine how that would have turned out. I just started a storm of sorts. I don't imagine how that would have turned out. Well, because of the difference in their styles.
That is true, but she immediately...
And because he takes forever to write.
That's exactly it. She immediately rejected him, or rejected that thought, because he hadn't finished his own series. And it's a bit mean to say, hey, come finish your friend's series before you finish your own, but we'd still be waiting, I think, for that first book, let alone
yep.
the other books, as it turns out. So, yeah, quite a moment to pick it up. Would anyone like to share... I mean, obviously, Jesse, you've just told us how you got into the series. Does anyone want to share how they got into the series?
Sure.
What's the reason they picked it up? Go on, Cheyenne. You can go first.
I will. Okay. So this was about a year ago. I had just discovered Daniel Green's channel. I can tell you the September. Wait, I forgot the date. But it was around September when I first started reading Warbreaker because of Daniel. Because I had been looking for The Wheel of Time, but I hadn't found it here. And so I had it on my TBR. I was reading what I could of Sanderson, which was easier to find, like while I looked for The Wheel of Time. And then, like, I had heard him talk about it a lot, and I watched some of his non-spoiler videos. And it just sounded really interesting. This was the time when I was really getting into a lot of the more, like, I'm not going to say recent, things in fantasy, because, okay, I'm 17. And so for a long time, I had been reading, like, things that were like more like YA style, Rick Riordan. And mm-hmm. so it was last year when I really started discovering these other series that leaned more towards the adult side of fantasy. And so I started reading Brandon's books. And then when I finally found The Wheel of Time, like, I bought it. That was like immediately, I was like, thank goodness. And I read The Eye of the World in December. Yeah. We were finishing December. It was almost January. And then I found out that my mother's cousin owned all the books.
Perfect.
And so she lent them to me until COVID hit. And then I just ended up downloading the rest on my own. But she lent them to me until COVID hit.
Cool.
Which was great. I still actually have some here because I haven't been able to give them back.
Do you have a favorite book?
it's hard, but I'd say I really enjoy Shadow Rising. It's pretty common, and the Memory of Light was absolutely crazy.
Yes.
As I say, the avalanche of the avalanche of the avalanche. Brandon is known for the Sanderlanche, and the last three books were the avalanche of the Wheel of Time. Then the Memory of Light is the avalanche of that avalanche. And then the chapter of the last battle, that is the one that's longer than a Harry Potter book.
Yeah.
The avalanche of the avalanche of the avalanche.
I should probably warn anyone listening to this. Is it 4.4 million words? Am I remembering correctly there?
Yes.
Andrew's saying 4.6. Okay. Yeah, it's longer than about seven other book series combined type thing, including Harry Potter and Lord of the Rings and such.
I don't know why I didn't just unmute and I'm sitting there mining.
No, it's entertaining. It's a very long series, but it's definitely worth it. You can totally just put the word count aside. It requires that much. I don't think anyone can disagree with that. It definitely, although there are moments that feel slower rather than faster and such, but it's definitely, you don't sit there and realize I'm reading 4.4 million words or whatever it might be and think, gosh, why is it not a million shorter or something? It's,
Rookie numbers. Get those numbers up.
Rookie numbers. Andrew, how did you pick up the books? What drew you to them?
So, like all the ancient great advertising, it was a word of mouth kind of, hey, you should read this book series. I just now realized how far or how long it's been since I started reading the series. Like whenever Jen earlier said it's been, 15 years, I was like, oh, that's a really long time. And mine is shorter, but I just realized it was 13 years ago that I picked up the first book. Because my mom got me into reading fantasy series with the Harry Potter series. And for the longest, we shared the same book. So she had her bookmark, I had mine, and we'd read through and I caught up. She was five books ahead of me or four books ahead of me or something. And I caught up in 3 weeks after I got hooked.
Sounds about right for Harry Potter.
Yeah. And then in 2007, Deathly Hallows was slotted for mainstream release July 21st. I don't remember that. I just looked it up. And because my birthday is the 15th, we were actually able to secure two early release copies for my birthday.
Oh, wow.
So I finished that series and I was like, wow, I really want to keep reading. And I was talking to a friend down at my grandmother's about it. And he was like, oh, well, there's this really cool series written by a South Carolina native, because that's where I was born, raised, and from. And I was like, okay, cool. And I'll check it out. And he handed me a paperback copy of The Eye of the World. And I looked at the front and I was like, my immediate first thought was like, this is a really old looking book art style. I'm probably not going to like it. Like I'm opening the book expecting to see words like thine and thy, all that. But it was cool because, I like medieval time frame. And so I started reading it and I finished the first book in 4 days.
Wow.
I now regret speed running my way through the series because I wish I'd taken more time to enjoy it like I did with my reread. Took it back to him after 4 days. I was like, I need the next one. And he's like, well, here's the next three and have fun. And of course, this is 2007, early 2008. So at the time we had no idea that that Robert Jordan wasn't going to be able to finish the series. And I think I remember I was caught up and I fully caught up. It was either a couple months before or a couple months after RJ passed. And I was kind of one of those. I was like, that sucks. I want to know what how it ends, but that's it. And I kind of just put it down, forgot about it and started reading other series. Then I joined the military, and in my long 12-hour stints of sitting in a truck on a flight line staring at jets that hardly ever moved, I was searching for a new book in the Google Play bookstore and came across the last three books, and those were read within a week and a half.
Wow. I mean, that's impressive for those last three books.
Wow, yeah. I remember reading Knife of Dreams in a day, but that was basically because I wasn't feeling well, and so I just had the whole day to read. But
wow, that is, I mean, I'm sure we're all avid book readers here. I'm sure we all have books that we could read in a few hours.
Yeah.
Prisoner of Azkaban, to go back to Harry Potter, it's my favorite Harry Potter book, and I can literally read that in about 2.5 hours. when I feel like picking it up. But
Harry Potter like more than a year, which is strange for me.
Yeah, it's quite a journey being on these reading these books. I mean, we've all done rereads, I presume. I'd be shocked if anyone doing a podcast hadn't. Well, you've only just, you're 17, and you've just read them for the first time. So, yeah. But you've already joined into an Instagram community for it. As this is just proving right now, there's multiple podcasts out there doing different things about it.
There are so many. It's impossible to keep up.
We're not the only ones?
Oh, yeah. It's just us five. Sorry. I wasn't meant to tell you about anybody else. Now, I remember where I was when I read some of the different points in the books. Like Rue, you know, Jen mentioned earlier, Dumai's Wells.
Dumai's Wells. I have such a clear memory of reading that.
I remember it's where strange. I was when I read the moment with, you know, the top of Dragon Mount and what was going on there. And just other moments throughout the books, like the conversation about boots, for example. I remember sitting and reading that and where I was. Do you have, obviously, I think Cheyenne's having similar experiences here, but is there a moment that jumps out for anyone else? Like, do you have that? Is it that significant to you?
So for me, I read them in high school. So I was reading them one of like three locations. It was either like in school, in my bed, or on the couch in the living room. Like it wasn't like I was going anywhere. But the one that I remember, and I won't be specific because it's from the last book, but how do I even... A certain character moment for Egwene. I was like in the middle of a class. I think it was like after we finished a test. So it was like dead silent in the room when I was like reading that. Like it was like take a book after a test and read it. And I read that one moment with Egwene and I just started crying in the middle of like a test. Like everybody else is taking tests and I'm there like trying not to like make noises. I'm just like crying. And it's just, that's the only one that I distinctly remember because that was one, like I saw it kind of coming and I was like, should I put this down? Is this the right time for this? And I just couldn't stop.
I just have to pause right there. I love how you've just said a moment with Egwene in the last book and not one of us was confused about what you were talking about.
All of us knew what you were talking about.
That just demonstrates the impact this series has on us and how much we love it and enjoy it, that you can just mention a book and a character and say that moment with that person in that book and we pretty much know exactly what you're talking about. Yep. I mean, that is if there was a better selling point for reading The Wheel of Time, I don't think I could probably have found one, to be honest.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
It is just, it's amazing to read. So I love the world building. And Jen, who said, sorry, I've totally forgot, who said their husband plays World of Warcraft? Was that you, Jesse? Was it?
Yeah. Well, my partner. Renata.
Oh, your partner. Okay. It's the world building aspect is something that I really, really love about Wheel of Time. But does anyone have a different favorite aspect? Like, what is your favorite bit about the books? Like, what is the biggest draw when you're reading? Is it world building, foreshadowing, characters?
Foreshadowing. I could talk about foreshadowing for hours. For the Cosmere, for Wheel of Time, they do such an amazing job with this. And I've only read it once, and I can still talk about it for hours.
I'm sensing a little bit of passion.
Yeah, I've loved Foreshadowing for a very long time. I actually wrote an article about it.
Andrew, you had something you wanted to add there before you said.
Oh, no. I mean, for me, my favorite aspect is the characters. I mean, there's over 2,600 named characters in the series. And so if you're sitting there and you're reading the series, you know, just like with Harry Potter, because I can talk about all Harry Potter and not worry about spoiling it because.
Yeah, this is not a Harry Potter podcast, so feel free to tell them that Dumbledore dies.
Batman kills Voldemort and all that stuff.
Yeah.
You have your main three. You have Ron, you have Hermione, and you have Harry. I don't know why his name was last and escaped me for a moment there, but. You have those that you see 99% of the series through. And then you have little bits where you kind of get Snape and all this other stuff. But the thing I love so much about the Wheel of Time is you get so many more point of views from characters. You get so much more exposure for a lot of characters that don't actually get a point of view. And it's like, if you're reading and you're reading through Rand and you're like so many people are, at least, you know, in the beginning, if not throughout the entire time, I can't stand this kid. then you have so many other characters that you can just resonate with. You have so many to choose from that you can kind of like take yourself, put yourself in their shoes and just follow them as your way through the series. And I haven't seen that in any other series to the effectiveness and magnitude that it is in Wheel of Time.
Nice. Jen, what would be your favorite part of the books?
Yeah, Andrew stole my answer a little bit. I was going to say the characters, just like what he said, where everyone has someone that they can relate to because there's so many different characters and they're all different. There's strong women, strong men. And yeah, like you said, you get into so many different points of view. Just reading the first book, mostly from Rand, it's once that kind of opens up, you see like, you can, oh, I understand why she said that or they did that now. And there's always, everyone has like their favorite character that they just like connect with. So I love that. And also the world building is just like I said earlier about how you know, it's like it starts off as like, you know, farm boy, never left his home. He has to save the world, which is like how every story starts.
That's a nice fantasy trope.
But then you get like characters like, just throughout like the Ogier, like they're not just like ogres. There's like a different take on every kind of trope. So I love that about it.
Yeah, we mentioned earlier the influence of Lord of the Rings, and obviously that's one of the ways that Andrew sells it. And it's a good way to sell it because, you know, Robert Jordan was influenced by Lord of the Rings. It's very obvious, particularly in the first book, but you still see it in later books. But it is different to it. It's not a copy of it. Everything's taken and made better, in my opinion. Another aspect of the books I wanted to chat about quickly, these were written in, is it 1990 the first book came out? Am I remembering correctly there? 1990, yep.
Yes.
And for that time, it was quite a progressive series. You know, you've got a lot of, I suppose, female empowerment might be the best way to describe it. You know, you've just got a lot of interesting ways of looking at things. And some things don't translate well as you go further forward. You know, there are things that don't age right. You know, Matt
a
and
hand grenade of a topic.
That's a hand grenade of a topic.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't know if this is the one to bring up. We're talking about getting people into it.
No.
Resist the spoilers. Resist.
But despite that, this is where I'm going. Despite that, there are the series is still really enjoyable for me because, you know, it was written in 1990 to obviously much later on, but predominantly in the 90s. It still is very enjoyable to me. I mean, I'm not sitting there and being like, oh my God, like you watch some things written or made 20, 30, 40 years ago and you think that just is not okay anymore or you can't put that out or read that anymore. Am I alone in that situation or?
I mean, let's use Lord of the Rings as another example. You have a series that's dominated, there's the word, thank you English, by male characters. It's all the story of male characters, and the times that you do see strong female characters, at least from like the movies, there's only like two, and one is just uber powerful OP elf lady, and the other one has to disguise herself as a man to get anywhere where she can do anything amazing. But you don't have that in the Wheel of Time. Very early on, there is an abundance of very strong, very powerful, very capable women, even if you don't make it past Amon's Field.
I think for the most part, it ages surprisingly well. I think there are certain topics it does not hit, but if we're talking specifically women, I don't think I've read much fantasy specifically written from a man in the 90s that was nearly as good at female representation as Wheel of Time. So if we're talking specifically that aspect, I think it does really, really well. I do think there are problems, but for the most part, it ages better than a lot of other things.
Yeah, I wasn't trying to sit there and say, oh my God, it's perfect for female representation or anything like that. I was trying to say that it does a lot better than a lot of other series, you know, do, particularly that were made at that time. Yeah.
That's an important thing to keep in mind.
Yeah.
I think it does a good job at creating, because the way society progresses, the way conversations happen and become normalized, is they get representation that doesn't coincide with where things are now, and you use those as catapulting points to carry on the discussion.
Yeah.
So I 100% agree that for the time it was very progressive. But I agree with Jesse as well, and a lot of other people, that no, it's not perfect. No, not everybody's role or how they're written is perfect. Nobody smooths their skirts that much. And I don't know the last time somebody complimented me on my calves, but I'm not Taylor with Dusty Wheel, so that might be why. But it opens up.
I was going to say, the way I tend to frame it is it's very second wave feminist. So it's a little outdated now because we're past that, but it's very second. It reads very second wave feminist. So progressive for the time, a little outdated, but you can still appreciate it within that framework.
Yeah.
You can use it as a starting line to start the conversation. Okay, this is where RJ's representations got up to. Now let's talk about what was good and what was bad about it. And whenever you do it like that, I'm perfectly fine with it. It's only whenever you get the, I call them absolutists, on any side of any argument, where they're like, it's either black or white, yes or no. And it's like, there's a lot more to the world than that.
Jen, dive in.
I think the show has a good opportunity to start where he was and take it up to where we are now, as far as like women's roles and things. And even people have been talking about like transgender and how that would work in this world, because of the two, it's very gender oriented. So that's something, there's just things without changing too much of the characters that they could address on the show to kind of take it to the next level.
Yeah. And I wanted to discuss this aspect of it because, you know, there's no point. I'm not wanting this to be an episode of like, oh, the books are perfect, they're amazing, everyone should read them. It's the, you know, there's no flaws in it whatsoever. I wanted to give a very honest opinion of the books. You know, so people didn't go in, you know, rose colored glasses or anything like that and thinking this is going to be perfect, because no series is perfect, but I think this is far greater than other series. And I love that little segue into the show there, because it is being made into a TV show and they're spending what, like $10 million an episode or something?
I don't know, but it's crazy.
Of Andrew there, he's like, we're recording this on Zoom for anyone listening, and he's just gone like, what? There's a TV show? He's being every enemy.
Whatever the amount it is, it's the same, I believe, as the last season of Game of Thrones. So that's where they're starting.
But we have source material up to the end.
Yeah. At least this series is actually finished. So
Exactly. They're finished. They have super fans working on it. It looks good. We're not going to.
Yeah, the few bits we've had have been really amazing. But the last thing I wanted to really dive into is, and it's not specifically about the books, but it's caused by the books. And that is you guys and all the other content creators out there, and to a much greater extent, the fans. So when my experience of the books is, you know, I've said this on my own channel quite a few times, but I picked them up because I was fed up of reading a book series that was one or two or three books long and it never sort of went anywhere. I wanted more world building, I suppose, is that, you know, that's what drew me into the books. So I found them on the shelves when I was about 15, like 5-6 books on the shelf. And I'm like, wow, this is something I can get into. But I spent many, many years finding no one else who's read them. And so I had no one else to talk to about. And I was like, this is depressing in a way, but, you know, like, you can't make everyone read the books type thing. And then, thanks to COVID, I found all of you. I found the fandom hiding away on Twitter, on YouTube, which I did not expect, because I'd found the Facebook groups and they are not the world's greatest Facebook groups, if I'm honest. But I'd never been one for Twitter. I'd never been one for watching YouTube programs or anything. No comments. And I have not found a community that is for anything. And I've been in the various communities over the years for different things, physically gone to events or, you know, just talked to people online and stuff. I've never found one that's been so open, so accepting, so friendly, so supportive. And that says something to me about the books, because the passion, the engagement, and just the excitement, the obsession about the books and the TV show that's coming with it, just translate into something that's so friendly and so beautiful that I want to share it with everybody, to be honest. I mean, what's your experiences with the fandom?
One of the things which I actually found a huge like indicator of how the fandom is and how close we are was the other day that Matt Hatch wasn't able to put on the traditional Dusty Wheel episode on Wednesdays. And you and Delusions of Gandalf just went for it. It was like I saw the whole thing like behind the scenes, like from the content creator Discord, and you just went for it and you did your own, and it was great.
Yeah, to give that context, so there's a gentleman out there who's he's fairly well known throughout the fandom, yeah. I would say, and known by
he was a beta reader.
The people with the books as well. So Matt Hatch, who runs a live show on Wednesdays on YouTube called the Dusty Wheel.
Founded a little site called Dragon Mount. I mean,
Theoryland.
Or Theoryland, sorry.
Yeah, Theoryland. So he started a website many years ago called Theoryland because he was obsessed with the books and wanted to collate all this together. He did that for...
And actually made it into the books.
And yeah, he's actually made it into the books. He was a beta reader for the last two. Like, he doesn't know Brandon to hang out and have a cup of coffee with, but he knows Brandon, you know, and has interviewed him a few times and that. And yeah, he does a show every Wednesday. And he couldn't make one Wednesday because of a commitment, so I decided randomly to try and fill the gap because we were so used to seeing him every week. So there's the context for that, what that was, but yeah. It was very entertaining.
And, like, it's those things that like bring the community together. Like I have never found like a more welcoming community. Like there's so many people like around, like the community from Instagram to podcasts. We've already mentioned how many podcasts there are, to Twitter, even though I'm not really on Twitter. The thousands of Discord channels.
It definitely feels like there's about 1,000 Discord channels now. Jen, what's your experience with the fandom and stuff?
I completely agree with you. I think this is one of the most welcoming, nice, open fandoms. When we started doing the show, I had no idea that there was like this much going on, and I think it's actually built up a lot more over the past year because of the show coming out. And but yeah, we've met so many people and all the Discords and like so many YouTubers. And we were on the Dusty Wheel, like it was probably at the end of last year, and Matt asked me like, oh, you watch any other podcasts? And I was like, no, I've never watched another podcast in my life, you know, and I never had. And now I've got like all these podcasts on my phone, all these YouTube, I'm constantly watching it. And my husband's like, what, another Wheel of Time? Like, I can't keep up. There's so much content and everyone's so nice. I want to support everybody. And everyone's so great about supporting us. And like anytime a new podcast comes out, everyone's like sharing their page. There's no like competition. There's enough content for everybody. Yeah. There's enough stuff to talk about. So yeah, I'm really happy that we started doing this and got to meet everybody and get into this fandom, because it's really great.
Wonderful. Jesse, what's your experience been?
Well, so I think, you know, I'm a little bit younger than the three of you. I'm a little bit older than Cheyenne there. So I actually was in high school, got involved in like the Facebook groups, which the main one that I was in was Screw You All, I Love Wheel of Time, which is actually run by Ray Rigney, which is Robert Jordan's nephew. And it was just great to be able to feel like I had this space to like talk to people. But like, and from there, I got onto Tumblr and then eventually Twitter and the Discord groups. And it's just, there is something about it that like the fandom has a way of almost self-policing in a way I've never seen another fandom do. Like Ben and I just had the Wheel Reads on our podcast, and we talked with them, and they're like, yeah, spoilers aren't a thing that happens to us. Like, everybody will crack down on that immediately when you're a first time reader. Like, the second they find out, they're like, spoiler warn, everything. So that's something I've never seen. I mean, when Game of Thrones was coming out, people were intentionally spoiling people. Like, so it's just so unique. And then the other thing for me was in 2019, I got to go to JordanCon. Ben, it was Ben's birthday present or Ben's Christmas present.
I
got tickets to JordanCon. And it's just an amazing experience. I mean, I think for me, somebody that's a little bit socially awkward, having a topic to already start talking to people with, like you get in there and you're just like, so who's your favorite character? And it just sparks the discussion immediately. And everybody was so kind, so nice, so welcoming. I was terrified. It was my first convention ever. I was horrified because you hear all these horror stories about like creepy men and nobody wears deodorant. And I was like, oh no, what am I getting myself into? No problems. It was just, everybody was super sweet. If you got confused or lost, they helped you immediately. It was just the most welcoming and friendly event I've been to ever. So I really think that like, is an embodiment physically of the same thing we see online, which is that everybody's super nice and everybody cares and looks out for each other.
Andrew, could you possibly add anything on top of this? I feel like we've covered a fair chunk of the fandom's way of behaving.
Yeah, I mean, Jesse, you got your revenge with stealing answers, because the policing was going to be one of the things that I was going to bring up. I mean, you have this incredible community that I don't know when you guys joined the community, but I joined it in like September-ish 2018, whenever the news initially dropped that Amazon and Sony Pictures had signed on to do a TV show. And when I saw that, I was like, oh, this is awesome. I want to find more information. I started looking, and that's how I found Twitter of Time and decided that I would actually re-download Twitter and all that. And just the growth that I've seen in the community over the past 2 years has been amazing. If you join the community and you do stuff like you're just going to spoil everybody, it's very, very quickly identified, disseminated across everybody very, very quickly. And probably within 2 hours maximum of you doing it, not only does the entire like Twitter of Time know, but the content creators know. And I think Cheyenne mentioned it earlier, there is a content creator specific Discord. So it only takes one person seeing it and posting it there, and all the content creators see it.
Well, wow.
Yeah. And that kind of allows the people that do a lot of this content creation, they can say something about it using the platforms that we have as content creators, whether you only have like 60 followers or you have, 5,000, 6,000, 10,000, however many. I haven't looked at who has the most, but it's
probably Daniel Green and Matt Hatch.
Daniel Green, yeah
probably.
And Matt Hatch.
I mean, I have an idea of who it is. I just hadn't looked to see what their follower count is.
Oh, wait, didn't Nablus get to 10,000 on YouTube as well? Or is he at 20,000 or something stupid, ridiculous? But anyway, digressing.
You could
Sorry,
say
Andrew.
Almost any. You could say almost any number, and I'd probably believe it. which is justified. And that's the thing. Mentioned earlier that like there's no competition amongst the content creators. Nobody's coming at each other seriously. I mean, you have playful rivalries, like with Andral and the Way of the Leaf. And that kind of stuff.
Yeah, or between the towers on Weaves. Swen and Ren are always arguing, but it's not true. And like, it's always like, oh, who gets a new novice, who gets a new soldier, whatever. It's very Python, all of us know it.
Yeah.
It's just one of those things that like, if you do something wrong, the community lets you know very quickly, but it's also very tolerant, very accepting, very open. To where if it was an honest mistake, you're not ostracized. This is what you did. And if you honestly make an effort to be better about it, then you're perfectly fine. If you do like some people have, and you barely make an effort to no effort at all, then the entire community, I don't want to say shuts you out, but there's a consequence to it. So I don't want to say the community ever shuts anybody out or ostracizes anybody, because I don't think it does.
No.
But I mean, there's certain people that, just don't find it into the mainstream part of the community, I think might be the best way to say it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a very safe community, as you say, self-policing. Yeah. And I think that speaks from the books. You don't get a collection of people like we have.
Exactly.
That we all share in this fandom with, unless the books drew that type of person together. Not suggesting if you don't like the books that you're not a good person, by the way. maybe if you don't like the books, you're a dark friend, but we'll just leave that one there. So pick up the books and you get yourself into this world, this just wonderful community. I mean, the five of us talking right now, we've never met in person.
Yeah.
In fact, the other four people on the podcast, Cheyenne, where do you live? Oh, not specifically, to name a country, obviously.
Colombia.
Andrew, Jen, and Jesse, you're all in America. I'm in the UK. We've never met in person.
Yeah, there are people from all over the world. Like in Weaves, I don't know how many countries we have now, but we have people in Turkey, in Fiji, in all parts of Europe, Serbia, the UK. Lots of Brazilians, which surprised me. Everywhere. South Africa. It's crazy.
And
actually, Ro has a map. I should ask.
There we go. But we've never met. In fact, Jen, Jesse, and Cheyenne, until tonight, we'd never actually spoken directly with each other than maybe a message on the Discord servers or something. But here we are just talking about the books because of how much we enjoy them and how much we want to share it with everybody. And I think that just personifies what the books are and how good they are to read. Would anyone like to add some sort of final thoughts to someone listening and saying why they should read the books beyond, if you like Lord of the Rings, you should pick it up, which I think is a great tag.
expanding a little bit on the world building question. I think the cultures are some of Robert Jordan's best work, and like they're really very well built. The Aiel, each country, the Sanchant, speaking of the Sanchant, like they're built so well that even though there's such a different perspective, it's amazing to see how the huge like differences in the way people see things and how it actually reflects like in their characters, in the way they talk, in their thoughts. Like Brandon Sanderson always gives the example in his lectures of like swan's fish metaphors or Avienda's comparisons like with water. Like those, like the way they think, the way they talk, and their word choice reflect their culture so clearly in a way that I haven't seen really in any other fantasy series. Brandon does a very good job, but I still think Robert Jordan has done better with it.
Jesse, do you have anything you want to throw in?
Yeah, I was just going to say, one of the things I was thinking about earlier, I always kind of sell the series a little bit as like, you're going to get a little bit of everything. There's horror in there. There's adventure. There's romance to an extent. There's
to a bit, yeah.
So there's a little bit, there's political intrigue, you know, there's a little bit of something there for everyone. But the other thing is, I just think Robert Jordan does some really unique things sometimes. Like one of my favorite things when everybody was talking about the characters, I love when you get a point of view from a random character that doesn't matter to see what's going on. Like he plays with things like perspective. He's the king of foreshadowing. I've never seen better foreshadowing. It's a series with a little bit of something for everyone. And it's long and it's a commitment, but I don't think I've ever heard somebody that actually finished the 14 books say it wasn't worth it.
I agree with you there. Jen, what would you say at the end here?
I think we've covered pretty much everything that's great about the books. I just want to say that if you read them, then you can be part of this amazing fan community and you can enjoy all the lovely things we've spoken about. And
we can discuss the spoilers with you.
Exactly.
Yes, we don't have to hold back. But I mean, it's 14 books, but definitely 100% worth it.
Wonderful. Andrew, anything to add in there at the end there other than Lord of the Rings?
Come read The Wheel of Time, get your extra Nazgul fix. everybody else is covered and we have in general how great the series are. The series is. There we go. English. Well known to be my strong suit. And not that anybody's like avoided the problems or anything, but I think there, with the recommendation to read the series, there should also come cautions to reading the series. This is not your, don't hand this book series to your 8-year-old child. No, this is definitely not something for preteens and children to read. And that's hopefully, and by everything that I've seen, going to translate over into the TV series. One of the things that makes the series so good is how relatable or recognizable some of the situations are. There are serious problems that happen in the series. There are assaults of various natures. There are just very uncomfortable topics that are addressed specific to the world that was built by Robert Jordan, but that make you think about everything in the real world. So if you're going to read the series, be prepared for the overarching overall epic awesomeness, but you also got to be prepared that, you know, these characters are written like real people. They have real lives and real issues.
Yeah.
So you have to be cognizant of that. If not, it'll just randomly slap you in the face. And, you know, it may make you put the book down forever, but if you go into it knowing that it may happen, you know, then hopefully it just makes you put the book down and until you're ready to come back to it. However long that takes.
Yeah, I have to say, even with the characters or a culture or a place that you find that you really hate when you read the books, It's because of how well they're written.
Exactly.
To fill that role of like this person or that culture or that practice is just horrible, or this situation exactly. is, I hate them. That is so, I feel very visceral about this. It's, they're so well written that
that makes you feel
that is the intention. Yeah. And every time I read any of the moments which are, you know, difficult to read or to talk about or anything like that, it gives you that appreciation, as Andrew has just said, but you also can appreciate the writing that's there and how Jordan didn't just like gloss over or anything, or like, we'll just skip. Well, obviously you don't skip, you can't go into detail on everything, but you know, just that you can, I mean, all right. So there's a couple of characters I absolutely detest, if I'm honest, but I love reading them still. And I know there's a couple of characters that people hate to read in general. There's a couple that, you know, a couple of boys, for example, that most of the fandom could do without. And there's a
we
couple,
all know who you're
and there's a couple of people out there.
Who, that.
And there
I
are people out there who
dearly.
Love them. Yeah. Well, John loves one of them in particular. From what I've he's adored one of them.
Like there's photographic evidence of that.
There is photographic evidence. He got a tattoo with it. Yeah. But even with those moments where you're like, oh, this is just, they're horrible to read or anything like that, it's because of how well they're written to be that person that's disliked or annoying or frustrating. And that makes me appreciate reading everybody, even if that was a person I wouldn't want to hang out with or would hate in real life. You know, and that is something I really like.
I mean, it's one of those things when you come out and you get to a certain part of the Dragon Reborn and you're like,
gosh,
I have to put this down. I can't deal with this. And I'm hoping that I'm saying the right book, if I'm remembering things correctly. Involving a certain very famous, very popular, very loved female character. I might
you're
be saying the wrong book.
You're getting it confused might have been. Looks now.
So maybe not Dragon Reborn, but in The Great Hunt and everything. And you're like, I can't deal with this situation. I can't read this. This is disgusting. There is an entire community that is spoiler conscious, spoiler friendly, that you can talk to about it and you can work through it. And I'd be willing to bet money that once the conversation was done, you'd go back into it and read it. And at some point in the coming pages and books after that scene, you'd be like, you know what? In the end, you'll be like, I'm glad I pushed through it.
Mm-hmm. I was going to highlight that. Like, the Wheel of Time fandom is so, so, what's the word? Thirsty for new readers. We love hearing
that's
it.
That's true.
We love hearing your first reaction. So, whatever social media platform you use,
anything.
Find a way to find us. Hashtag something Wheel of Time, and somebody will find you.
Twitter of Time on Twitter.
Because
on Instagram.
Are we like a fantasy element version of the Borg, but much nicer?
Yes. Not malicious. We just want to involve all of the world. We don't want to take over the world and control it. We just want to involve it.
There's somebody that always retweets, because there'll be a person saying, I just finished Wheel of Time and I have nobody to talk to. And all of a sudden there's like 500 likes on it.
Yes.
Like, yeah. God, another one, everybody.
It is. That's what they're saying. There's another one. We've just found them.
You think we've scared anybody away with like, oh, I just finished reading. I have no one to talk to. And they suddenly get, you know, hundreds of notifications.
I'm curious if people listening right now are going to be scared of it. Like, so they've just talked about those difficult moments in the books that we can discuss with the fandom. And then if I tell anyone I've actually finished, there'll be like 1,000 people jumping on my Twitter account.
But that's just it. If there's those difficult moments, I mean, you can literally just tweet out, I just finished chapter whatever of book whatever. Screw so-and-so. You'll have a dozen people being like, oh, yeah, screw them. Like, you'll get that kind of... It's something I wish I had had when I read the books for the first time.
And it's something I wish I had with so many other communities.
Mm-hmm. So just reach out to us if you're reading for the first time, because we are excited to hear your thoughts.
So
I think hashtag first time reader is also a very popular tag for first time readers in the fandom. So
it's first watt timer.
Is it first watt timer? There we go.
On Twitter.
Put them both in.
For example,
put them both in. Why not?
Another example, like, for example, Emmy, for the longest time, like, she was reading the books, and she was, like, on the Dusty Wheel streams, and everybody always asked, like, is Emmy here? To know that we wouldn't spoil things she hadn't read. Things like that. Is there any first-time reader? It's they're so conscious about spoilers.
I think the overarching message we're delivering right now is even if you don't adore the books like we do, finish them because you will adore the fandom and we will adore you for it. So if nothing else, read the books just so you can join us, because we're a great group of people. I can't say that enough, because this year has been horrible for everybody. And I have a huge silver lining in finding the whole fandom. So, and I can see that's everyone's experiences. Before I go, I would love it if everybody could tell those potential first time readers where to find them once they finish the series. So why don't we go, Andrew, you tell us where we can find the Black Tower and what we could expect perhaps.
So for 99.9% of our episodes, you can find us after you finish the series, at blacktowerpod.com. And that has links to all of our stuff, or anywhere you can find podcasts, you can search us and find us there. There are several episodes that aren't spoiler free. Way back, Aaron and I got to do an episode with Kate Reading and Michael Kramer, the voices of the audiobooks, if you're listening to them. And we've done overviews of all the books. It's all in the titles. You can find those if you just want to listen and see how much you do or don't want to listen to us. There are episodes you can go and listen. Pretty recently, we did one with Stuck on Arrakis about first time reader.
That's a great episode.
Kind of stuff. So gotta love doing those kind of things. But yeah, blacktowerpod.com, and it has links to our Twitter, our Instagram, the YouTube, all that fun and fancy stuff.
Jen, if people want to listen to your stuff or just hear about the TV show and they don't care about spoilers, because those people exist out there, obviously, where can they find your stuff?
Yeah, you definitely. Joe, one of my co-hosts, loves spoiling things, will always say, like, me and Tom will always say, like, when that happens, and he'll be like, oh, you mean that? And then just say it. We try all the time. But you can, like Andrew said, you can find us same anywhere you can find podcasts. We're also on Facebook, we're on Instagram, we're on Twitter, we have a Discord. So
and just in case you don't know what to look for, it's Talk Around Riyadh.
Yes, I'm sorry, the name of the podcast is Talk Around Riyadh. So
wonderful.
Yeah, we're out there, you can definitely find us, and hopefully we won't spoil it for you.
Fingers crossed that Joe takes a night off when you listen. Yeah. Cheyenne, why don't you tell everyone where they can find stuff on Instagram if they're Instagrammers and okay. Not podcasters?
So, yeah. At Weaves of the Wheel, there are like 5 different handles like for the community, but Weaves of the Wheel community. If you want to join, message our Amaryllis seat, Suana Sedai. I think handle is at the Yellow Age. I don't know if there's an underscore there.
Cool.
And if you want to like read my stories and get a sense of like what are the kinds of things we do, it's at Cheyenne underscore Sedai. And oh, and if you just want to talk like general like conversation, you can join the reading rooms without having to join the role play, because I know sometimes writing can be intimidating, and it's not only for writers.
No, like, I'm in one of them
videos,
as well.
If you make like other types of content, music, I think, although we don't have that many of those, but videos, for example, it works very well. Joram does videos and it works perfectly fine. So another thing I will mention is the talk show that Suana and May, the Keeper of the Chronicles, have. It's Water and Shade on YouTube. Just look for it. It's very funny. And they have great conversations. So again, spoilers.
Yeah. This is after you've read the books, ladies and gents, with the exception of our few spoiler-free episodes that we've done here or there. Jesse, why don't you tell listeners where they can find yourself and your brother?
Yeah, so we are Another Turning, so you can find our podcast. That's just TV show Wheel of Time content. The podcast can be found anywhere you get your podcasts. We also have a YouTube channel that has some of our podcasts as videos, but I just do general book stuff. So if you like books and aren't necessarily hooked on Wheel of Time yet, I just have some stuff where I talk about books in general. And then you can find us on Twitter at PodAnother. So if you want to just hang out and talk there, it's an option.
Am I right in thinking your Twitter account still says Another Turning of Steve?
I think it still does. Yeah, that was, I don't know. I feel like that joke died and I never got around to fixing it.
I love it. I love it. Actually, I genuinely mentioned it last week to someone and said, I'm sure there's still like 5 or 6 Steve accounts out there.
Yeah, I think they faded over Halloween because Halloween, there was a bunch of candy stuff going on. So I think Steve got replaced by candy for a while and people just moved on with their lives. And I'm still there repping Steve.
Nice. Keep it going. Don't let the Steve die.
It's funny.
I'm not letting it go until Amazon tells us who Steve is.
Yeah, Steve was a casting controversy, but it wasn't a confirmed casting controversy. It was a leak that's
a theory.
So we've had a lot of fun theorizing about who he
is. Yeah, there were so many Steve theories.
But I still haven't read New Spring.
There were like a name of
yeah, that's the prequel, ladies and gents. Yeah.
Wait, Andrew, why not?
He's been promising for months, like six
months.
I'm trying to
think of a good reason.
After we've just sat here and talked about why people should read the 14 books.
Since we're talking about it now, I am going on Amazon right now, and I will buy it right now.
Excellent.
And it will
probably it's easily top 3 Wheel of Time books for me, so I'm excited.
I really like New Spring.
It's brilliant. Don't read it until you've read at least, I would say, up to book 6, personally. Some people say earlier, some people say later.
Yeah, after Fires
Lots
of Heaven.
Some people say book 5.
My favorite.
Because of the end of that.
But I want to thank you all for joining me this evening. It's been a pleasure. It's been nice talking to some of you for the first time and still having a blast. And I hope you can come back. And for anyone listening, I hope we've kind of teased enough of the books without spoiling anything. And hopefully you pick it up and join us on this crazy journey of books, TV show, podcast, YouTubes, Twitters, Instagrams.
Part of the ship, part of the crew.
Everywhere.
Part of the ship, part of the crew. Love that. So yeah, thank you so much, guys. And until next time, everybody, may you always find water and shade.